Okay, welcome back everyone to our Daf a Week class. Good to see everyone here. So like I said, we are on Yud Dalet Amud Beis. We are on the second line of the page, at the second to last word of the line, Tanu Rabbanan. So if you remember, we were discussing at some point relatively recently about the notion of how many people one can learn Maaseh Merkava with. This mystical scene in which Yechezkel or Yeshaya, they somehow saw a vision of God, as it were, and in that vision, if anyone wants to learn about that, there are a tremendous amount of halachos that go into who is able to learn it, how many people could you learn it from, and in particular, the Mishnah was not entirely clear in terms of how many people or who you can learn it with, but it seems like as long as a person is incredibly worthy and able to learn this stuff and understand these things on his own, at least on some level, then he can learn one-on-one with his Rebbe to learn these matters about Maaseh Merkava. So today we are basically all going to have a Agadata, and the Agadata is going to continue for a long time at this point, for the next few weeks likely, and it's because we're going to go into the famous story of Nichnes Lepardes, that the four rabbis went into behind the curtain, they saw interesting things, and then of course we go into the very famous story of Acher, Rabbi Meir's Rebbe, Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, who had a tremendous experience when he was Nechanes Lepardes, and he ended up becoming a kofar, or ended up leaving Judaism after that. So let's jump right in, and we'll see where it takes us. So Tanu Rabbanan, again, the second line of Yud Dalet Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanan. Maaseh b'Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. There was a story with Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shaya Rochev al Chamor. He was riding on his donkey, Vaya Mahalech Baderech, and he was just going on the way. He was going somewhere important. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, Mechamer Acharav, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was sort of like right behind him. He was like walking behind him, maybe guiding the donkey a little bit. And while he was doing so, he was basically there to be Mashamishim, to get an understanding, to be able to ask him some questions, and to be able to learn from him. So Amar Lo, so he says to him, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Amar Lo, Rabbi, Shanali Perek Echad b'Maaseh Merkava. He says, teach me one of the chapters of Maaseh Merkava. Amar Lo, Lo Kach Shanisi Lachem, so he says back to him, what do you mean? Didn't I already teach you guys all these matters when you were in class or whatever? Didn't I teach you these things that you can't learn Maaseh Merkava with one other person unless he's a chacham, he's a very wise individual who can understand things on his own? And evidently what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to tell Rabbi Elazar ben Arach is that you're not one of these people, you can't understand it, so I can't teach it to you. So Amar Lo Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, no, Tarshini lo mar lefenecha davar achar shalem. He says, no, Rebbe, you don't understand. Not only do I understand these matters, and therefore you should be able to teach it to me, but in fact, you yourself have already taught me some of these matters, so of course you should trust me to teach me more. Amar lo amor. So he says, okay, great. So what did I teach you? I can't remember right now. Miyad yarad Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai me'al hachamar b'nisatef yashav al ha'evin tachas hazayas. So at this moment, before he was about to hear what Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was about to say, he came down from off of his donkey. He wrapped himself up, I guess, in some sort of a talus or something of the like, and he sat down on some sort of a rock underneath an olive tree. Amar lo Rebbe, mipnei ma'yirata me'alachamar. He says, Rebbe, we are going to the store. We're going on a journey now. Why are you getting off your donkey? So Amar, efshar ata doresh b'maaseh merkava v'shchina imanu u'malachei asharis malaven osano v'ani erkav alachamor. He says, what do you mean? Why am I getting off the donkey? He says, right now, you're about to talk about the Torah of the Maaseh Merkava, and you're going to be expounding in all these matters. And when you do this, the Shechina, Hashem's presence, will literally be with us, and the ministering angels will literally be walking and guiding and traveling along with us. And I'm going to be riding on top of a donkey while Hashem and the angels are walking with us. It's a chutzpah. How could I do such a thing? So he says, I need to sit down nicely in a mechubad, like an honoring manner, and then I'll be able to hear these incredible words of Torah that you have to share. Miyad pasach Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. So immediately he began speaking. He began darshaning b'maaseh merkava. Hamerkava. He began speaking and learning the maaseh merkava. V'darash, and he was expounding. He was teaching some of the things from the maaseh merkava. V'yarda esh min hashemayim. V'siviva kol ha'ilano shebesadeh. Little unclear exactly what this means, but we'll translate it according to at least one of the interpretations. So immediately as he was expounding some of the Torah from the maaseh merkava, a fire comes down from heaven and it surrounds all of the trees in the field, and according to some, it consumed, it burned up all of the trees in the field. Paschu kulan ve'amru shira. At this point, all of the trees got up and they started singing shira. They started singing songs to Hashem. Or I guess songs about the Torah that's being learned. By the way, it seems like it's clear that the trees were not consumed entirely, because if they were consumed entirely, how would they sing Shira? So the trees start singing Shira to Hashem. Ma Shira Amru, what song did they sing to Hashem? A pasuk that we all know very well. Halalu es Hashem, in ha'aretz taninim, v'chol tomos eitz pri, v'chol arazim haluluka. Right, the notion that we say that praise Hashem from the earth, that the sea giants and all of the all of the depths, all of the watery depths, and the fruitful trees, and all the cedars, haluka, everyone should praise Hashem. Na'anem malach mina'ish, the angel spoke up from the fire, the amar hein masim arkav, and he says, you know what? This Torah that Rabbi Elazar ben Arach is teaching over, this is masim arkava. So there are those that explain, though, what angel is this that he's sort of intervening and speaking up for Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, confirming, almost like giving testimony, that it's the Torah of Maaseh Merkava? So there are those that explain that it was specifically a malach, it was an angel that was created through the teachings that Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was giving over. Specifically, an angel was created every time Maaseh Merkava was learned and was darshaned. So this angel was learned created as a result of this learning, as a result of this teaching, of this expounding, and so therefore he says, by the way, just so you know, proof that this was, that he was teaching over Maaseh Merkava, that he knew some Torah in the Maaseh Merkava, is the fact that I was created as a result of it. So at this point, Amad Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, v'nashkol rosho, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai got up, he gave Rabbi Elazar ben Arach a kiss on the head, v'amar baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael shanasan bo le'avram avinu sheyodea lehavinu v'lachkor v'ledrosh b'Maaseh Merkava. He says, wow, unbelievable, he kissed Rabbi Elazar ben Arach on the head, and he says, blessed is Hashem. Blessed is Hashem, the God of Israel, that He gave the son of Abraham, our forefather, a son who knows how to be able to understand and to investigate and to expound into the Torah of the Maaseh Merkava. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai originally said, I can't teach you the Maaseh Merkava because you don't know how, you're not one of these chachamim who is able to understand these matters. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Arach basically says, no, I am. And here's why, because this is what you told me already. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was very pleased to hear this. And evidently, the story is sort of ends over here. We'll see it goes on a little bit more, but the implication is that I guess Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does go on to teach him some more Torah from the Maaseh Merkava. But now we return back to the skinny lines of this page, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai continues to praise the greatness of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. He says, "Yesh na'a dorish v'yesh na'a mikayim." He says there are those that darshan, there are those that expound psukim, expound the Torah well, and there are those that practice, and there are those that do not practice well. Meaning, you have an individual who can learn out the halachos. He knows the text. He knows what the Shulchan Aruch says, but he's not very good at keeping a halacha. He doesn't keep it well. He doesn't do it well. And that's one type of person. Na'emekayim. There are some people who keep the halacha very well. They know darish, but they don't know how to darshan. They don't know how to expound. They don't have that capability. And he says, atana edorish v'na'emekayim. He says, not only are you good at expounding, but you're also good at upholding, at keeping the Torah. And the understanding of this is essentially that the only type of person who could learn and who could expound Maaseh Merkava is someone who kind of like walks the walk and not just talks the talk, you know? Since he had to be someone who was like of pure heart, and so it was clear that he was someone who practiced, who was Mekayim well, and the fact that he was expounding right before him proved that he was someone who darshaned well. So he, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, was saying about Rabbi Elazar ben Arach that you are both a Na'e Dorish and the Na'e Mikayim. And he continues, Ashrecha Avi Avraham Avinu Sha'alazar ben Arach Yatza Michalatzach. And he says, praise it is Avraham Avinu, that, almost like speaking to Avraham, praise it are you that Elazar ben Arach comes from your lineage, from your loins. Ukishina Amru Hadvarim, Lifnei Rabbi Yeshua, Hayahu Rabbi Yosi Akoin Mahalchim Badarach. So now we shift, we sort of like pivot in the story. We're no longer talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Elazar ben Alach, but rather this story that we just read over was told over to Rabbi Yeshua, and now the Gemara is going to pick up from this point. So you have Rabbi Yeshua and a person named Rabbi Yossi HaKohen that are walking together. So again, Rabbi Yeshua heard this story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that he was so proud of his Talmud, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. So Rabbi Yeshua heard this story while he was walking along with Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. These two individuals, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, were also Talmidim, were also students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So they heard this story, and as a result of hearing this incredible story, Amru, they said, Anu Nidrosh B'mayis Merkava, we too also want to darshan. We too should go ahead and darshan the Ma'aseh Merkava. In other words, what Rabbi Yeshua got out of the story is that if you could darshan Ma'aseh Merkava, if you could teach and learn this Torah, you should teach and learn this Torah. And you see that from the beautiful story that we just shared. So now Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, so we should do it too. So here we go. Pesach Rabbi Yeshua v'darash v'oso hayom t'kufas tamuz. So Rabbi Yeshua, he got up and he started darshaning when he was walking with his friend Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. And on that day, it was t'kufas tamuz. It was the summer months. It was the month of Tamuz. And during the month of Tamuz, as we know, there is very little rain in general, right? We don't say much of a ruach l'merid ha'geshem during the summer months, because in general, we assume that there's not much rain in these months. And so in this time, when there is not much rain, and therefore not many clouds, hayanis kashru shamayim ve'avim, the whole sky became black with clouds, v'nira kimin keshes be'anan, and it appeared that some sort of a rainbow-like figure appeared in the clouds. And what was the rainbow-like figure? Unbelievable. The hayu malachi hasharis miskabtsin uban l'shmoa kibnei adam shemiskabtsin uban l'ros b'mizmute chasin v'kala. And so the Gemara explains, what is this rainbow-like structure that they saw in the sky? It was the malachi hasharis, was the ministering angels, who all gathered for what reason? To hear the words of Rabbi Yeshua expounding the Ma'aseh Merkava, and the Gemara explains, what do they gather like? They gather like you ever go to a wedding, I haven't been to a wedding since the beginning of Corona. Ah, that's not true. I've been to one wedding, but you know, the weddings are so different now. The weddings, pre-Corona for sure, you had the Chasan and Kala sitting in the middle at one point during the dancing, and you had all the people standing around, and every now and again, you'd have someone, you know, go to be misamech, the chasan and the kala, and dance for them. But you had all these people around the chasan and kala, and around the person in the middle dancing, just watching him. So that's the imagery we're supposed to have over here. That's what the malachi hasharis were doing. They were sort of standing up there, and watching down from shamayim, just like the people watch those who are dancing with the chasan and kala. So too were the ministering angels watching Rabbi Yeshua darshan the Ma'aseh Merkava. And so now halach Rabbi Yossi HaKohen v'siper dvarim lefnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, after this whole thing happened, they had an incredible experience. Rabbi Yeshua was darshaning b'Ma'aseh Merkava, and this amazing scene came where they saw a rainbow like structure, but they looked up with their binoculars and they realized this is not just a regular rainbow, it's actually the ministering angels watching us teach and learn the Torah of the Ma'aseh Merkava. So they were evidently proud of themselves. That seemed to have been an approval from Shemayim of what they were doing. So Rabbi Yossi HaKohen went over and told his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, exactly what happened. V'amar ashrechem v'ashrei yolad aseichem. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to him, like, praised are you, and praised are those who gave birth to you. Ashrei any ashrei Enai shekach ro, you know, praise it are my eyes that I got to witness such a thing, that I have talmidim who are like you. Ve'af ani ve'atem b'chalumi mesubin hayino al har Sinai. And he says, and even I and you, in my dreams, we're sort of sitting and having a seudu or having a meal at Har Sinai. And in my dreams, when this was taking place, there was a baskol, a heavenly voice that came from Shemayim. Alu lekan, that said, everyone should come ascend here, ascend up to here. Traklin gedolim umatzos naus mutzos lachem, and that there are large dining halls with elegant couches that are prepared for you. That's what I was told in my dream. Atem, for you. the tamidichem for your students, the tamidi tamidichem mizumanan lakas slishis, that you, your students, and the students of your students are all sort of mizuman. They're all invited to come to the kas slishis. Rashi explains what's the kas shlishis. So he explains that shel kitos hayoshvos lifnei hashchina. There are those that explain that basically Hashem in Shemayim has like three levels of people who learn Torah that are sitting in front of him. There are those people who learn Torah. This is Rashi doesn't go into this in depth. Others explain this, but there are those who learn Torah very extensive. Let's start basically. There are those who learn the bare minimum amount of Torah, and those people sit in the outer areas. There are those people who learn a lot of Torah, and they're like Higisa bo yomam v'layla, but they're only just learning, you know, just learning basic Torah. Then there are the people who are like above and beyond anything you could ever imagine, and those individuals are sort of in this third category who are the closest, the concentric circle, not concentric circles, just like concentric circles, like a ripple effect, and this third category is the ones that are sitting closest to Hashem, in that kumzitz circle, if you will, and all of these people, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his students and the students of their students, that he was told in his dream that everyone was going to be invited to this third closest circle to sitting around Hashem. Now says the Gemara, Eini, is this so? Is what so? So let's see. V'hatani Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shlosha Hartzos Heim. There are three people who had like discourses of Ma'aseh Merkava. So we see that what the Gemara is going to take issue with is who was the individual who was known for having a discourse, known to have a conversation and a drusha situation with Ma'aseh Merkava. The Brisa is only going to quote three people, and whoever we leave out will evidently not be included in, or will not include one of the people that we just mentioned. So let's see. V'atani, the Brisa says, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Shlosha, Hartzah, was saying there were three people who had discourses of Ma'aseh Merkava. Rabbi Yeshua, Hartzah, Dvarim, Lefnei, Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yeshua, he darshan before Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva darshened before the Yeshua. Chananya ben Chachinai hartzelef nei Rabbi Akiva, and Chananya ben Chachinai, gave a darshened Ma'aseh Merkava before Rabbi Akiva. V'ilu Rabbi Elazar ben Arach lo kachashav, and we just said this whole story began with us saying that Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was darshening in Ma'aseh Merkava in front of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but the Braisa doesn't include him as one of the three people who had these such discussions of Ma'aseh Merkava. So how can you tell me that Rabbi Elazar ben Arach actually did go ahead and have such a conversation, that he was someone who darshened Ma'aseh Merkava in general? So says the Gemara, no. The artsi v'artsu kame kachashu. What the Brice is including is not just the people who they themselves expounded, who sort of had a conversation, who spoke in learning in the Ma'aseh Merkava, but also the people who they themselves were expounded to. So in other words, they darshaned the Ma'aseh Merkava to someone else, and someone else also darshaned to them. That's like an extra higher level, and evidently, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, he was on the level of being able to darshan Ma'aseh Merkava to someone else, but he was not on the level of being zocha to have someone else darshan Ma'aseh Merkava to him. So the Braitha only lists the people who darshan to someone else and who had it darshaned to him to themselves. The artsi v'lo artsu kame lo kachashiv. Right. So exactly, anyone who they darshaned, but they were not darshaned to, they are not counted. Says the Gemara, what? The Hachanani ben Chachina. Did you not just read the list that you just gave us? The list that you gave us has Rabbi Yeshua, that he taught to someone else, and that he was taught to, and Rabbi Akiva taught to someone else, and he was taught to, but Chanani ben Chachinai, the lower tzukame the kachashiv, he didn't teach Torah to anyone else. He didn't darshan Ma'aseh Merkava to anyone. He was not darshan. No one darshan Ma'aseh Merkava to him. He only darshan to Rabbi Akiva, but no one darshan to him. So says the Gemara. No, the artsi miha kame manda. Artsy, no. He darshaned in front of someone else who they themselves were zocha to have someone darshan in front of them. And that's an individual who's allowed to be included. But evidently, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who darshan in front of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai himself never necessarily had such a zuchus, and therefore he was not included, something along those lines, so therefore he was not included in this list. Okay. With that, we now continue with the famous story of the Arba Nechnasim Lepardes. Just as a disclaimer beforehand, which we've had this disclaimer before in some of the Sagadata of Maseches Chagiga, and that is that it's really hard to understand anything about what we're actually about to read in particular as we will delve into the stories of Acher. It's nearly impossible to understand this. The Gemara gives us an imagery of which we can rely on some level, but at the end of the day, it's sort of we're going through this to share the basic stories and you know use the imagery that Chazal wanted us to use, but there's just almost no way to understand this. In fact, some say that what we are about to read actually happened, that they actually entered into Shemayim, whereas others will say no, they never entered into Shemayim. Seemingly, they reached some sort of high level of learning, likely a learning in Maisa Merkava, that enabled them to sort of create this heavenly experience on earth, but not that they actually ever went to heaven. Regardless of what it was, hard to understand, but let's see what the Gemara has to say. So Tana Rabbanan, the rabbi saw in a brisa, Arba'a nichnasu b'pardes, there are four people who went into Pardes, ve'iluhin, and these are them, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, Rabbi Akiva, four individuals, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, who was the Gemara will later define as Elisha ben Avuya, and Rabbi Akiva, these four people went into Pardes. Amar lehem, Rabbi Akiva, kishatem megiyin eitzel abnei sheish tahor, so Rabbi Akiva, who seems to be leading the charge in some way, he says to them that when you get to these avnei sheish tahor, that when you get to the pure marble stones, Al Tomru Maya Mayam. So this is again very hard to understand. He says, don't say that this is all water. In other words, these stones in this like that represent this wall that are in front of this heavenly court or whatever it is, it's so clear, this marble, that it looks like water. So he says, don't call this stuff water. Why? Mishum shenamar dover shkarim lo yichavin leneged einai. That because the pasuk says that anyone who speaks fallacies, who speaks lies, will not get the opportunity to abide in front of my eyes. So Hashem says, I don't want liars in front of me. And if you come into heaven and you say that this is water over here that you're seeing when it's really not water, it's actually a marble wall, you'll be considered a liar, and then you won't be able to join. So he says, make sure you're not lying at all, even though you're not technically lying. You know, you're just explaining what you see. Don't do that, because your eyes will be deceiving you, essentially. An important piece of advice as they go into whatever this Pardes thing is, because of the fact that one of the things that seems to have led Acher off the derech is something that he ends up seeing, and Rabbi Akiva is basically giving them this preface by explaining that don't trust whatever you're seeing, because it's not entirely clear what you're seeing. You may not be seeing exactly what your eyes are telling you you're seeing, so don't trust everything you see exactly. Anyway, so what happened to these four individuals? Ben Azai, he tzitz umes, that Ben Azai, he sort of saw the Shekhinah, whatever that means, he saw a little bit of the Shekhinah, and he died immediately. Allah v'kasav omer, yakar b'nei Hashem, hamavsa l'chatzi dav. Right, another well-known pasuk, that difficult in the eyes of Hashem is the death of his devout ones, meaning Ben Azai had to die, because anyone who sees the Shekhinah can't live. You can't live to tell the tale of seeing the Shekhinah of Hashem. So he had to die, but nonetheless, Hashem did not want him to die, and therefore the fact that he died, Hashem, not happy with that. Ben Zoma, he tzitz v'nifka, so Ben Zoma, he saw the same thing, or something like it, that Ben Azai saw. V'nifka, he became like mentally unstable, he like went crazy. V'ala v'kasav omer, d'vash matzata echol dayecha, pen tisba'enu v'ikasu. And when you find honey, eat what is sufficient for you, lest you be sanctified, or rather, lest you be satiated, and vomit it up. In other words, the imagery seems to be that one can come to a point where they are sort of eating too much, too much for their own good, or eating the sweets before they eat the main part of the meal. And it would seem that on some level, Ben Zoma probably did this, that he partook of the holiness of Pardes, maybe too much of the sweetness without eating enough of like the main food groups, if you will, right? Not partaking enough of the other types of Torah. That's at least what the implication of this it seems to be. And so therefore, as a result, he went crazy from this. Acher kitzeitz benetios. So this whole sugya, this whole brisa, has the imagery of a Pardes. Literally, a Pardes is like an orchard. So they all went into the orchard. What is the orchard? Who knows what the actual orchard was? was, but they went into this orchard. Going along the imagery of they went into the orchard, so what was Achir doing in the orchard? Well, he was chopping down like saplings. He was chopping down trees in the orchard, that just to show the kind of individual that he was. Whether or not, it seems to be that the implication is that the fact that he was zochet to be able to be nichnas lepardes, that he was not an individual who would have chopped down the cherry tree in heaven, but whatever he saw enabled him and encouraged him and pulled him to start chopping down these cherry trees, that not literally cherry trees, that he started chopping down whatever these trees were, chopping down these saplings in the parties. And then finally, Rabbi Akiva Yatzav Shalom. Rabbi Akiva came out totally in peace. Rabbi Akiva was evidently the only one. He was, of course, the one that we said at the beginning, before they went in, he gave the warning. He was evidently on a slightly higher level because he knew how to guide everyone. He was the only one who was came out in Shalom, who came out in peace. Now, the Gemara is going to go into two specific questions, two specific shailas that were asked of Ben Zoma, because Ben Zoma was a very, very, obviously, all these four individuals were incredibly high-level people. Even though Rabbi Akiva was the only one who came out unscathed, they all were understood to have been tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, right? Acher, again, we'll have to worry about that when we learn more in depth about him. But Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, even though one of them died and one of them went crazy, the understanding is they were huge Talmidei Chachamim, because they would not have been Zoche to be Nichnas Lepardes if not for that. So the Gemara goes ahead and tells us two shilos that were asked of Ben Zoma. So it says the Gemara three lines up from the bottom. Shalu es Ben Zoma, they asked of Ben Zoma, Mahu l'srusei kalbi. They asked him, can a person neuter a dog? You'll say, what does that do with anything? So the explanation is, let's read the answer and then we'll sort of give a little bit more background. So Amar lehem uba artzachem lo tasu. So the full pasuk over here could be found in Sefer Vayikra, and what the pasuk is telling us in this context is that umauch v'kasus v'natuk v'karos lo takrivu l'Hashem u'ba'artzichem lo tasu, that one should not take a sacrifice that has that's a sris, right? If you have an animal that has like crushed genitals or anything like that, so you should not take that animal as a sacrifice. And the fact that the pasuk goes out of its way to say u'ba'artzichem lo tasu, then in your land you shall not do. So Ben Zoma understood this. He darshaned from this that kol she'ba'artzichem lo tasu, that any animal, not just those animals that you are bringing for a sacrifice, and not just the animals that are the same ones that you bring for a sacrifice. So there are three different possible categories. There are the animals that you are actually bringing for a sacrifice. There are the animals that are the same as the ones that are brought for a sacrifice, but are not actually being brought as a sacrifice, right? So a sheep that is being brought as a korban, and then just a sheep that's not being brought as a korban, but just a sheep that you own. And then the third category are those animals that are not on the list, that are not zocha, that are not on the level of being brought as a sacrifice. And that would be like a dog. A dog is neither brought as a sacrifice, nor is it on the list of animals that is brought as a sacrifice. So this type of animal, what is the pasuk saying? Are you allowed to neuter the dog or not? And so says the Gemara, says Ben Zoma, that because the pasuk says, u'ba'artzichem lo tasu, you shall not do this at all in your land, it means kol she'ba'artzichem lo tasu, that no animal in your land, or all animals in your land, should not have this done to them, and therefore one is not allowed to neuter their dog. Very important halacha that most people are not aware of, people that have pets and they neuter their animals. It's very, very complicated in halacha how people do that, and in theory there might be ways to achieve that, but most people, unfortunately, I think probably do end up violating this halacha, unless you, of course, buy an animal that is neutered, then maybe you get past the issue. But nonetheless, so that was one of the halachic questions they asked him, and that was his answer. Shalu es Ben Zoma, but then they asked Ben Zoma another question. This is a little bit more intricate. Besula she'ibra mahu the kohen gadol. Let's say you have a virgin who has immaculate conception. You have a virgin who somehow ends up pregnant, and she's saying, I'm a virgin. And what do you know? I guess you check her, you get the OBGYN in, and you see her hymen is still totally intact. So she clearly did not have relations, but she's clearly pregnant. You see the baby is growing in her belly. So this basula, this virgin that's pregnant, so what's the halacha? Is she allowed to marry a kohen gadol? Remember, a kohen gadol can only be married to a basula. So is she allowed to be married to a basula or not? So says the Gemara, what are the two ways of looking at this? Mi chai shinan l'dishmuel, are we choshish for that which Shmuel said? Damar Shmuel, yachol ani liv'ol kama be'ilos below dam. That Shmuel, who evidently was an expert in this area, he knew how to have relations with a woman. And when he had relations with a woman, he could make sure that that there would be no dam, that he would not rip the hymen when he had relations with her. So he said, so the Gemara says, do we have to be choshesh that maybe this is a guy like Shmuel who knows how to have relations with a woman, and she actually is not a basula, she's not a virgin, she did have relations, but she had relations with some sort of expert who knew how to make sure that her hymen would still be intact? Oh, Dilma de Shmuel Oshchicha. Maybe the case of Shmuel is so uncommon that that most people are not like Shmuel. You're not going to find many people like that in the world who are able to have relations with someone and not break their hymen and still make them pregnant. And that's so true that is the case, that it's so uncommon that we assume that this woman is telling the truth, that she actually has some sort of immaculate conception. We'll explain, not actually immaculate conception, but we'll explain how that could happen in a second. So just because she conceived and had a child doesn't mean she had relations. She still could be a basula. Then she still could, in theory, be permissible to the Kohen Gadol. So which side of these two ways of looking at it do we hold like? So says the Gemara, Amar Lehu de Shmuel Oshchiach. He says back to him, Ben Zoma says back to him, says back to them, that the case of Shmuel is not common. You rarely find someone who knows how to have relations with someone well enough that the hymen will still be intact, but that he'll be able to conceive, evidently. So so how did this happen? How did this woman actually become pregnant? The Chayshinan Shema Be'ambati Ibra. Because there's a concern that maybe she became pregnant. How? Because she was sitting in some sort of a bath, some sort of a body of water, and she became pregnant through that. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I believe, very famously quotes this Gemara that, you know, this sounds like total quack science. How could this be someone sitting in a bath and become pregnant? But I believe he quotes this Gemara as a precedent for explaining how artificial insemination works. That this is exactly what artificial insemination is. A woman that you take some of the sperm and you put it inside of her, and the Gemara, what do you know, even back in the day had this type of conception, even, no pun intended, had this type of concept, even though it was not exactly how we do it nowadays, but there is such an idea that a woman could become pregnant through the semen finding its way into her without her actually having relations. Fine, so maybe that's what we're choshesh for, and then you don't have to be worried that she seemingly could still be able to marry a Kohen Gadol if she says, I'm a virgin, and she still has an intact hymen. Even though she's pregnant, she still in theory can marry a Kohen Gadol. That's what Ben Zoma paskind. The Amar Shmuel Kol Shechvat Zera She'inu Yorek Kechetz Inu Mezare Mizarat, right? That Shmuel has another halacha that he taught, that anyone who is mashchet zera, who completes the action of causing the sperm to come out, and he's not yorik kechet, that it doesn't shoot out like an arrow, then you, one cannot fertilize a woman one cannot fertilize a woman with that sperm that comes out if it does not shoot out, right? So if it just sort of like falls out, then it will not fertilize a woman. And obviously, if this woman is getting if it's swimming inside of her based on the bathtub that it finds itself in a bathtub, so obviously it's not yorik kechetz, it's not shooting inside of her. So says the Gemara, no. Even though that's what Shmuel says, what he meant was meikara nami yorik kechetz hava. That at the end of the day, it has to be yorik kechetz. It has to shoot out like an arrow at some point. And nonetheless, this individual, he was mashchet zera. He spilled his seed and it came out in the way of yorik kechetz. It sort of shot out of his body, and therefore, as a result, even though it didn't shoot into her like that, since it shot into the bathtub and then it swam inside of her, since she became pregnant that way, it's possible that she could become pregnant, and she's still there. Therefore, is going to be permissible to a Kohen Gadol. Okay, with that, let's read a couple of more lines, and then we'll stop here for the evening. So Tana Rabban, the Rabbi Sodan Rabbi said, Ma seb b'Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya Shaya omid al gav ma'ale b'har abayas v'ra'ahu ben zoma v'lo amad milfanav amar v'lo amad milfanav. So the Rabbi Sodan Rabbi said, there's a story of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya that he was standing on like a step on har abayas, and ben zoma saw him, and he didn't stand up for him, meaning Rabbi Yeshua Ben Chananya was someone who was seemingly worthy of being stood up for, to have respect for him. But Ben Zoma, when he passed by, he did not stand up for him. He did not give him the proper respect. So Amar Lo, so Rabbi Yeshua says back to him, May Ayin Ula Ayin, Ben Zoma, From where are you going and to where are you going to? Meaning it must be something really important to do if you're not going to stand up for me. That seems to be the implication. Amar lo tsufa hayisi bein mayim ha'alyonim l'mayim ha'tachtonim. He says, I'm so sorry. I'm not really on this planet right now. I am currently in the middle of surveying the space between the upper waters and the lower waters, meaning the heavens and the earth. He's trying to figure out how much space is in between the heavens and the earth. Ve'ein bein zelazat ala shalosh et ba'os bilvar. And he says, you want to know how much room there is between the heavens and the earth? Like, you know, if you look out into the, you know, look out into an ocean and you want to know how close is the sky, how close is the heavens to the ocean, right? So if you fall for the optical illusion when you're looking out into the Atlantic Ocean, you'll see that they actually touch. So says Ben Zoma, no, they don't actually touch. There's actually three etzbaos. There's three finger lengths of space in between them. Or finger widths, rather. Shneamar v'ruach elokim merachefes al p'neimayim k'yona shemerachefes al b'neh ve'ina noges. How does he know this? Because the pasuk in Bereishis says that the spirit of Hashem was hovering over the water, like and what was it? And what else hovers over something else? A yona, a dove, hovers over its children, and he doesn't touch them. And how far? Evidently, the implication is this yona is the dove from his children when he hovers over them. Three etzbaos. So therefore, we know that Hashem too was three etzbaos. The heavens and the earth are three etzbaos apart from one another. Amar lehen. Rabbi Yeshua, Latamidav, Adayan ben Zoma Mibachutz, Rabbi Yeshua said to his students, unclear if it like was in front of him or if it was afterwards, but Rabbi Yeshua said to his students, this guy Ben Zoma, he's still Mibachutz, he's still like out to lunch. He still doesn't exactly know what he's talking about because what he said doesn't make any sense. Why? Because Michdi, let us see. V'ruach elokim erachefes al p'nei amayim, emas havei b'yom harishon, hadala b'yom sheniu. He says that when was the spirit of Hashem hovering over the water, thereby in Ben Zoma's mind determining what the distance is between the two? That was on day one. But when was the Havdalah? When did Hashem divide the heavens and the earth? That was day two. So don't tell me that based on what happened on day one, we can know the distance after day two. That doesn't make any sense. So therefore, it says the Gemara, that it says in the second day he was madgil between each of the waters, the heavenly waters, the earthly waters, the heavens and the earth. So fine. Then says the Gemara, okay, so big shot. So how much of a division? How much of a divide is there between the heavens and the earth? The kama amar avachaber Yaakov kimlo nima, a hair's breadth. That's how much is that's how far the heavens and the earth are distant from one another. So in other words, now we're saying even smaller measurements than these three etzbaos. It's like the space between, when you have like a bridge that has wooden planks on it, so it's like the space between each of the wooden planks. You'll say, so are we talking about like a very badly made bridge? No, we're talking about like a very nicely made bridge that has one plank after the other, and there's like a nanometer in between each of these pieces of wood. That's that distance between one plank of wood to another. That's the distance between the heavens and the earth. And Marzutra v'itema Rav Asi. So then Marzutra, and some say it was Rav Asi. Amar says kitre glime deprise hadade. It's like when you lay two pieces of clothing over the other. If you lay a shirt on top of another shirt on your bed, so the distance between them, which also was like I don't even know what that distance is, if it's anything. But that very, very, very small distance, that's the difference. That's the distance between the heavens and the earth. Some say, no, it's like when you stack two cups together, they're like stuck, one is stuck in the other. So again, there's like a no distance virtually between these two cups. But whatever that distance is, that's the distance between the heavens and the earth. So with that, we'll stop right here. And God willing, next week we'll pick up from this point where we begin the stories of Acher. But for now, I wish everyone a beautiful night.